a time portal, isn't it? I must have looked surprised, because she said, I knew it, and don't look so surprised. It's obvious with all the colonial costumes and the movie you showed us about the pilgrims in Holland and the talking horse who knows about American history. Just what is it you're going to do, Elizabeth? I asked. What am I going to do? She asked, acting surprised. It's not about what I'm going to do. It's about what you're going to do for me. That sounds like blackmail, said Cam. At least one of you has some brains, Elizabeth scoffed. Whatever, Tommy said. We'll all deny what you've seen and heard, and you'll end up with the nurse again. Already thought of that, said Elizabeth. That's why I had the custodian help me install that small camera in the corner of the ceiling. We followed her gaze and saw the lens pointing right at us. So let's get this straight. Either you do what I say, or I take the video to my daddy, and it's bye-bye, Mr. Revere. No more liberty. And I'm pretty sure I can get the rest of you expelled from Manchester Middle School. Why are you so mean? Asked Freedom. Elizabeth sighed and said, Freedom, I'm not mean. I'm simply taking control of the situation. You see, when things get out of control, I have to tighten the controls. Let me put it this way. Some people were meant to rule, that's me, and other people were meant to be ruled, and that's you. Some people are superior, that's me, and some people are inferior, and that's you. Mr. Revere, called Tommy, I say we take Elizabeth with us the next time we time travel. Seriously, I know just the person she should meet. I bet she's a direct descendant. I knew exactly whom Tommy was thinking of. I knew Thomas would get it, said Elizabeth. My name is Tommy, he said. Elizabeth sighed. Tommy is a child's name. Thomas is much more sophisticated. Plus, Thomas and Elizabeth sound much better together, don't you think? Excuse me, asked Tommy with a stunned look on his face. I've been thinking, since you're the star quarterback and I'm the most popular girl in school, that we'd be perfect as the homecoming king and queen. And then we could rule the school together, Elizabeth said, smiling. Just as long as you do exactly what I say. Cam nearly laughed out loud and Freedom just rolled her eyes. I don't know what warped fantasy world you're living in, Tommy replied, but keep me out of it. Elizabeth ignored Tommy's remark and impatiently said, The day isn't getting any younger, people. I want to time travel now. Now? Tommy asked, surprised. Liberty looked heartbroken. But I thought it was time for me to finally perform for the class my stomp act about the Stamp Act, he whined. If she's time traveling, then count me out, said Freedom, crossing her arms. Me too, said Cam. And me three, Tommy said. Elizabeth grabbed Tommy's arm and said, I insist that Thomas travel with me. Riding behind him will be the only thing that gets me on that horse. Oh, brother, Tommy mumbled. Elizabeth continued, and another thing. I'm not wearing any colonial clothing. It makes you look like orphans. Except for you, Mr. Revere. You look like you should be in an insane asylum. This girl was starting to get on my nerves. I took a deep breath, and I exhaled slowly. She would have to wear the appropriate clothing if she wanted to time travel, but I'd deal with that later. I sighed and said, Very well, Elizabeth, if time traveling is what you want, time traveling is what you'll get. But for the record, you are not forcing me to do anything. I'm happy to take you. I'm happy to teach you what only history can share. But mark my words, history has a way of showing us the good, the bad, and the ugly. Are you prepared for that? Elizabeth simply shook her head and rolled her eyes. Mr. Revere, she said, I deal with the good, the bad, and the ugly every day at Manchester Middle School. For example, my fashion sense is the good. Freedom's fashion sense is the bad and the ugly. I'm out of here, Freedom said, giving one last glare to Elizabeth. Bye, guys. I'm going to class. As she walked toward the classroom door, she turned back and looked at Liberty. I suspected she was sending him a telepathic message. Liberty whinnied and smiled. He whispered,
Freedom thinks that we should take Elizabeth to the past and leave her there.
I'm out of here, too, said Cam. I better change my clothes before all the girls see me. That's right. I've seen Elizabeth like she's all desperate to know how I make these colonial clothes look so good. We can hang later, Lizzie, Cam winked.
My name is Elizabeth, you moron.
Whatever, Cam said casually. Maybe I'll see you guys at the football game tomorrow night. Cam gave us a giant smile and strutted toward the bathroom. I turned to Elizabeth, and I said, Are you sure I can't persuade you to wear something more appropriate for our 18th century visit? Elizabeth sighed, as if she felt sorry for me. She replied, I should be asking you the same question. And then in a very condescending tone, she began pointing to what she was wearing and slowly said, This is a LePleur jacket, and these are Yass jeans, and my Pominelli shoes are from Italy. You, on the other hand, are wearing scraps and rags from the thrift store. I'm surprised you're not pushing a shopping cart with all your belongings inside. My mouth dropped open slightly in disbelief. She just called me a hobo. Tommy replied, Elizabeth, you can't show up like that and not expect people to start asking questions. As he continued to try to explain the potential danger of a girl wearing jeans in the 18th century, I turned to Liberty and whispered an idea into his ear. Liberty mused,
yes, that might be the perfect solution. Good, I whispered.
And I still have Freedom's colonial dress. That should fit Elizabeth. I interrupted Tommy and Elizabeth and said, It's time we show Elizabeth what time jumping is all about. Tommy lifted himself up onto Liberty's saddle, and I helped up Elizabeth, who sat right behind him. Liberty, it's time we visit Windsor Castle in England. Seems like a place that would suit Elizabeth. Windsor Castle is a part of American history? Tommy asked. It's the residence of King George III, I said, and he was very involved in shaping American history.
Meeting a king sounds great, but what are we waiting for? Asked Elizabeth, sounding irritated. Enough chit-chat. Sitting on top of your donkey's making me gag. Seriously, the smell is like a manure pile. Let's go already.
Some people need a swift kick in the you-know-where, Liberty snorted.
Let's just stick with our plan, I assured him.
Fine, said Liberty. It'll be my pleasure. He took a deep breath and firmly said, Rush, rush, rushing to history. As the gold and purple time portal started to open, I hoped our plan would work. I ran closely behind Liberty as he galloped toward the portal. I shouted, England, Windsor Castle, 1766, King George III. As Liberty jumped, I heard Elizabeth scream as she passed through the portal. I immediately followed, and in the time it takes to hurdle a small fence, I landed on the other side. The first thing I saw was Elizabeth sailing over Liberty's head, landing face first in the middle of a small pond with several lily pads floating on the surface of the water. Tommy quickly jumped off Liberty and raced over to the edge of the shallow pond and yelled, Elizabeth, are you okay? Let me help you out. Elizabeth pushed herself up, sopping wet. Her red headband was floating in the water, and in its place was a limp lily pad. Her jacket and jeans were muddy. Her mascara was smeared. As she slowly walked to the lawn that surrounded the pond, I noticed she was missing one shoe. I could barely see it stuck in the mud about 2 feet under the water. Her hair was matted to her face, and although her mouth was open, I wasn't sure if she was breathing. Finally, the silence was broken when she screamed,
Ah! What just happened? What kind of horse stumps like that? Are you kidding me?
Liberty confessed. Well, you know, I really didn't think that you'd fall face first into a pond. Sorry about that. The plan was to get your clothes a little muddy, so you'd want to change them and wear something from the 18th century. I'm the one who makes the plans around here, remember? Elizabeth shouted. Just help me get out of this sewer. Smells putrid almost as bad as Liberty. Liberty ignored the insult, distracted by the new scenery. With wonder in his voice, he said, "Now that is a castle." Directly in front of us was a tall, massive, round stone tower. It was ancient-looking, but matched all the smaller castle-like towers and buildings that surrounded us. The smaller towers were connected by a large stone wall that was clearly meant to keep out the unwanted. After a moment, I realized that we were inside the grounds of Windsor Castle. The yard was beautifully landscaped with a variety of trees, shrubs, and flowers. The aroma from many varieties of roses was intoxicating. Birds chirped from the trees as bees buzzed around the garden. The scene was a paradise, and very different from what the colonists were dealing with in a new country. As Tommy helped Elizabeth to a small stone bench just a few yards away, I reached for my travel bag that had the colonial dress. Suddenly, a voice from behind us yelled, "You there! What is your business?" I turned to see three British soldiers running in our direction. Their red coat uniforms looked brand new. Their black boots shined. Their gold buttons sparkled. Even their muskets looked polished, as if they had never been used. Life behind castle walls was certainly much different than life in the American wilderness, where British troops had to try to control headstrong colonists every day. "How did you get into the castle?" asked the lead soldier. He sounded very annoyed. "Would you believe we dropped out of the sky?" I said jokingly. Apparently my joke wasn't very funny, as the soldiers just glared at me. "As a matter of fact, we have urgent news for the king," I said. "Only those invited get to see the king," said the soldier. "Do you have an invitation?" I paused for just a moment before Tommy butted in and lied. "We did, but it's probably at the bottom of the pond. You can see we had a little accident." I smiled and said, "Yeah, that's right. Poor girl, and now she's wet and freezing, and I'm sure the king would not want any harm to come to one of his invited guests, especially one so young and beautiful." Elizabeth just sat there looking cold and miserable. The soldier looked at Elizabeth and then back to me. He paused before he finally said, "Very well, follow me. But if the king is not expecting you..." I interrupted and said, "I assure you the king will be glad we have arrived. Our news is of the utmost importance." Soon we were following the lead soldier, with the other two soldiers following us. We approached a very large door, big enough for Liberty to fit through. Two more red coats stood guard on either side of the door. We quickly entered into an immense hallway with colorful tapestries that hung from the stone walls. On one side of the hallway were full suits of armor from the Middle Ages. The armor stood like sentinels ready to come to life and protect the castle if need be. When we were halfway down the hallway, we saw a tall man descend a stone stairway. The man was in his mid to late 20s. He looked young, but was dressed in clothing worthy of a king. Everything he wore looked expensive and new. The rich colors of his clothes, his perfect posture, and even his powdered face intimidated me. The vision of this man was so royal, so majestic, I could barely speak. As he reached the last step of the stairway, I forced my tongue to comply with my mind, and while bowing low, I said, "King George, Your Excellency." Liberty bowed as well, which seemed to amuse the king. "I am Rush Revere, history teacher and historian, and these are my students, Tommy and Elizabeth. We've come to bring you news from the New World.
Your Highness, the lead soldier said with a bow, they insisted that their news was urgent.
The king looked me up and down as if to say, what are these peasants doing in my presence?
His eyes turned to Elizabeth and said, Elizabeth is a fine name, a royal name. But why is she drenched from head to toe?
Guard, find the maids and have them dress her in something appropriate. Take her to the red drawing room when she is fit for company, and you can burn those rags she's wearing.
Elizabeth was staring at King George III as if he were a rock star. Surprisingly, she did not complain about her clothes getting burned. In fact, I wondered if she had hurt him at all. Instead, she bowed low and said, "Thank you, Your Majesty. Your clothes are magnificent. You shine like gold. It's been a long journey, but I am honored to be in your presence."
I was shocked by Elizabeth's sudden change in character. She was actually being nice and extremely polite. She played along perfectly and curtsied to the king, and then followed the guard while leaving a trail of water still dripping from her clothing.
"Is that the same girl that we know? That's what you call sucking up," whispered Tommy with a grin.
"Is something amusing?" King George asked, reminding us quickly of our surroundings.
"No, Your Excellency, quite the opposite," I said, standing up straight. "There is a serious situation happening in the colonies."
"Well, let us retire to the red drawing room. Guard, take Mr. Revere's horse to the livery."
It didn't take us long before we entered a magnificent room adorned with red velvet chairs with golden armrests. Huge golden-framed paintings of kings and queens lined the red fabric walls. The ceiling looked like it was painted with real gold leaf. Golden tables with intricate and expensive-looking vases and statues and golden clocks reminded me that we were indeed in a real castle with a real king and his real riches. Several of the king's guards entered the room with us.
"Tell me this important news from the colonies," said the king as he gracefully sat in a royal-looking chair and crossed his legs. The king didn't smile, but he wasn't frowning either. Tommy and I found chairs and sat down. I said, "We are here to tell you that the people are not happy in America." The king looked mildly interested in what I was saying, but not very concerned.
"What concern is that of mine?" he asked.
I was thrown off a bit by his question. I had expected him to ask me to explain further. Tommy looked at me with his eyebrows raised, as if to say, "What now?" I knew I couldn't change history, and I hadn't come to pick a fight, but I was determined to explain the colonial situation and hopefully learn some historical truth in the process. I said, "This should concern Your Majesty, because the people are getting more and more angry. They left England for a reason. They were looking for freedom and the chance to really succeed with their lives."
"You came all this way to tell me that the colonists are fighting with the motherland? You think this is important information for me? You are a foolish man," said the king in a raised voice. I must say that his insult got under my skin. I respected that he is a king, but I was born an American, and I wasn't thrilled about getting treated this way. I held my temper enough to say, "Your Excellency, please, if you would, you are mistreating the people. The taxes are too severe, and they cannot vote. This isn't the way to lead."
"Revere, I should throw you out in the moat this minute for your ridiculous statements. How dare you tell me how to be a leader? I am the head of England. I know exactly what I'm doing. The New World is our land. The people are ours. They must share their wealth with the homeland. They must pay taxes to England. They must obey the wishes of the king.
The guards in the room moved closer to King George, as if I was some kind of threat. Normally, I'm as cool as a cucumber, but this was getting out of control. The king was really laying into me now, and I must say it was getting to me. Tommy whispered, "No wonder Elizabeth is a fan. He's a bigger diva than she is." "Your Excellency, you're a smart man," I said. "Why are you pursuing this path? What benefit is there to Britain?" I was trying to remain detached as best I could, an observer of history.
"I do not need you to tell me I am smart. I do not need you to tell me anything, you buffoon," the king said, pounding the bottom of his fist on his knee.
"With all due respect, Your Highness, I am hardly a buffoon." I tried to maintain some sense of relaxed scholarship, but I was starting to sweat, and my heart was starting to beat faster, and I was either scared or angry or both. I continued, "I'm just trying to figure out why you are so dedicated to limiting the rights of the Americans. Why do you treat them this way? Why are you taxing them so much?" The king squinted at me and asked, "Do all the colonists dress like you?" Before I could respond, the king replied, "The hat you wear, it is atrocious. Your coat is that of a commoner. Your shoes look pale and unpolished, and your speech sounds ghastly. You have a speech impediment, or was your mother simply as dumb as you are?" Did he really just insult my mother? This king was pompous, he was rude and inconsiderate. Frankly, he was a jerk. "No matter. I will answer your insidious question," the king said. "The colonies are behaving like children. They have forgotten their mother country, and for that, they must be disciplined. They are not their own land. They are not their own people. They are part of this country. They are under my rule, and always will be." I knew I shouldn't provoke the king, and was doubtful that anything I could say would get through to him. But he did insult my mother. I finally said, "Yes, children can be very rude. In fact, you yourself look very young. Was it you who chose to punish the colonists by creating the Stamp Act and Quartering Act?" My comments seemed to strike a nerve in the king. "How dare you!" shouted the king. The king's guards pressed forward and unsheathed their swords. King George raised his hand, and the soldiers stopped. I imagine they thought my words had sentenced me to the dungeon. I doubt many people, if any, dared speak to the King of England like I had. King George eased back in his chair and coldly said, "Parliament creates the rules based on what they feel is best for the colonies and best for England. The 13 colonies need order. They need England like a baby needs its mother's milk." When he finished speaking, he smirked with satisfaction. I forced myself to remain calm and replied, "It's a good point, Your Highness, but the colonies believe they are no longer babies. In fact, they believe they are no longer children. Their economy is thriving, their businesses are successful, and they refuse to be told what taxes they have to pay." The king interrupted and exclaimed, "And that is something that a child would say. I will have the colonists back under my control. These so-called patriots will never succeed as individuals. They will bow to the king and serve the crown. They will do what they are told. I will not tolerate anything less." "I'm not sure about that," I whispered to Tommy. "The United States of America is going to be born soon." Tommy whispered back, "This is better than Monday Night Football. Revere versus a King of England." I was glad Tommy could have a sense of humor. The tension in the room was so thick you could slice it with a butter knife. "You have some nerve, Revere. You took a great risk coming here and addressing me with this drivel." King's face was red. His eyes were fiercely focused on mine. Whether good or bad, something inside me pushed onward. I could tell I was losing some of the history teacher and getting involved a little too much in the actual history. "Careful," I said to myself, "careful." "Your Excellency," I said, "what the people want is a vote. Why is that so hard to understand?" "I recommended ending the stamp tax. Isn't that enough for you fools? You truly are children." "I don't care what the colonists want," the king yelled as he stood up from his chair. "I've heard from the provincial Benjamin Franklin. He is a fool to side with those who fight against the crown. And rebels like Patrick Henry and Samuel Adams will hang from the gallows for their treacherous words. I will have my way," he pouted. "I will. I will. The colonists are rabble-rousers, common criminals. They are dumb, silly-dressed fools who are still subject to my laws and my word. I shall not have them forget that I rule the new world. I am the king. The land and the people of the 13 colonies are still mine. Mine, I tell you. The colonists will do anything I say and buy anything we sell them. Except for fine fashion, it appears." The king sneered with a wicked grin. "As a matter of fact, I am signing the Declaratory Act in the morning, which gives England and the king full authority, full power, to make laws that are legally binding on the colonies." In other words, I said, England's grip on America becomes even tighter. "Like handcuffs?" asked Tommy. "Exactly," I said. I stood and motioned for Tommy to stand as well. I tried to remain humble, realizing at any moment the king could tell the guards, "Off with my head." I took a deep breath and said, "This act, this declaratory act, will make my countrymen even angrier. It will feel like the freedoms their ancestors fought for are being taken away." The king sneered and said, "You imbecile! The colonists have no idea what is best for them. They are not capable of making decisions for themselves. I am their king, and I know better than they do what is good for them. I want them totally dependent on me for everything. That is the way it has always been. That is the way it should be." "I could not agree with you more, Your Highness," said Elizabeth, who stood at the door of the red drawing room. She was wearing the most exquisite blue gown, which seemed to sparkle. It reached all the way to the floor and looked like something from Cinderella's ball. A short white fur was draped across her shoulders, and her hair was curled and beautifully arranged on top of her head. And I could tell her face was powdered, and she looked several years older than she really was. "Elizabeth," Tommy asked, "what the... did you bump your head when you fell into that pond?" "The king is so wise and so amazingly handsome," Elizabeth said, ignoring Tommy. "I absolutely agree. Taking control of the situation is the only thing to do. We need to do what needs to be done to help them see that the king's laws are just. We need the colonies to show more respect to England. We need to force them to obey. I declare that we put troops in every house and tax the little fools." "We?" said Tommy. "And who made you queen? Maybe bringing you here wasn't such a good idea." The king turned to Elizabeth and said, "It is reassuring to see this kind of transformation and hear this kind of loyalty from one of my colonial subjects. The point is, a good leader is supposed to protect and preserve the rights of the people. Instead, it appears as though you are trampling those rights with tyranny," I said, knowing full well that I would break what little harmony there was in the room. "I am done with you," screamed King George. "I rule, and I grow tired of your insults." He walked toward Elizabeth. He took her hand and kissed it. "Elizabeth, I am glad for your company, and I wish we could have spent more time together. He then turned toward Tommy and me and shouted, "Guards, escort my lady and the two bloody Americans to the front gate. Retrieve their horse from the livery and send them on their way." Two guards escorted Elizabeth by the arms, and another two escorted Tommy. As they left the room, King George called to me one last time. I was really not interested to hear what the king was about to say. In fact, I knew I had pushed the king too far and had overstayed my welcome. That wicked grin returned to the king's lips, and he said threateningly, "Mr. Revere, do not ever forget that I am king of the most powerful nation in the world. My word is law. Your pathetic life has been spared for one reason. I want you to sail back to your woeful America and tell those wretched rebels that I will send the entire British army to force them into submission if I have to. Do you understand? Or is that too difficult for your pea-sized brain?" "Oh, I understand," I said with a smirk. "It will be my pleasure." Chapter 7. After leaving the castle, we found a secluded area in a nearby forest to time jump back to modern day. Liberty suggested that I put duct tape over Elizabeth's mouth so that we wouldn't have to hear her incessant complaining about getting kicked out of Windsor Castle. "Rush, rush, rushing from history," Liberty said. And like clockwork, we arrived back at Manchester in the same hallway just seconds after we had left. In fact, Cam must have just finished changing into his modern-day clothes and was walking back to the classroom when he noticed us in the hallway. "Haven't you guys left yet?" Cam asked. "What's taking you so..." And that's when he noticed the dress that Elizabeth was wearing. "What happened to her?" "Would you believe she fell into a pond?" Liberty said. "More like thrown into a pond," Elizabeth countered. "A pond?" asked Cam. "Was there a toad in the pond that kissed her and she turned into a princess?" "I wouldn't let a toad kiss me. Gross! If we were in England, I'd have the guards throw you into the dungeon," Elizabeth said. "She may look like a princess, but she's acting like a toad," Cam replied. "Let's get back into the classroom. I imagine the video of Benjamin Franklin's almost over," I said. "Quick, someone take a picture of me wearing this dress," said Elizabeth as she handed Tommy her phone. "It's the least you can do after ruining my visit with King George." Tommy took a quick picture and handed the phone back to Elizabeth. "I can't wait to post this on Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram." Liberty interrupted and said, "I remember when people would simply post things to doors. For example, in 1770, I remember a posting about the Boston Massacre." "The mass of what?" Tommy asked. "The Boston Massacre," Cam said. Liberty agreed. "Yes, I saw a drawing of it that Paul Revere engraved and printed and posted all over Boston. I suppose if Paul Revere had Facebook or Instagram, he would have posted it there as well." "I wish I had taken a picture of King George," Elizabeth sighed, as if she were daydreaming. "He looked magnificent." Elizabeth twirled around and around as she waltzed down the hallway. "Adieu!" I looked at Tommy and Cam, who looked as worried as I did. "Should we try to stop her? What's going to happen when Principal Sherman sees her dress?" said Tommy. "Yeah. She has all the evidence she needs to bust us," Cam said. "That's not panic," I said. "I don't think she's in any hurry to burn the bridge that let her meet King George. I'd say she's very happy." "I'd say she's loopy," Cam said. "I'd say she's nutso," said Tommy. "I'd say her chimney is missing a few bricks," said Liberty, who snorted at his own joke. "I'd say you better get in here," said Freedom, who stuck her head out of the classroom door. "The video you took of Benjamin Franklin just ended, and kids are wondering where you are." I turned to Tommy and Cam and said, "After Tommy changes his clothes, I need the two of you to go to the teacher's lounge and grab the sound system and speakers. Bring them here so Liberty can perform his stomp act about the Stamp Act." Cam started to laugh and said, "I'm sorry for laughing, but it sounds really funny every time you say that." Liberty replied, I always laugh when I hear the question, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? If I ever meet a woodchuck, I'm going to ask him if woodchucks really do chuck wood. And if so, how much wood would he really chuck if he could? I mean, if he chucks too much wood, could a woodchuck upchuck the chucked wood? The things this horse says, I thought. I smiled, and I pulled Liberty's halter toward the classroom doors. Let's go. It's time for honors history, I said. The two boys darted down the hallway, and Liberty and I entered the classroom. Upon seeing us, the students quickly settled down. I walked to the front of the class and said, "We're going to have a quick test on the movie about Benjamin Franklin that you just watched. I'm going to pass out a piece of paper, and I want you to answer the question, why were the colonies opposed to the Stamp Act?" I heard a couple of moans and sighs, and I continued, "Now, before you answer, I'll need you to give me $5 each for the paper you're going to use to take the test." This time, I heard a lot of moans and gasps and sighs and even, "That's a ripoff!" "Is there a problem?" I asked. A boy in the middle of the room raised his hand and said, "It's not fair!" And then a girl said, "Don't my parents already pay taxes for this?" Another boy said, "Do we have to use your paper? If I use my own, do I still have to pay the $5? I smiled and I said, "Yes, you still have to pay the $5. Yes, I assume your parents are paying taxes already. And yes, I am requiring you to pay this paper tax because it's going to help me pay off some debts." Now it seemed like the whole class was in an uproar. "Mr. Revere," said Freedom from the back of the class, "this sounds a lot like the stamp tax that Parliament and the King demanded that the colonies pay. And we sound a lot like the colonists, who didn't think it was fair." "Very good, Freedom. I'm glad to know that the video you watched may have taught you something. In any case, I think Parliament and the King are right, so I need you to pay me now." "Seriously?" Freedom smirked, thinking I was kidding. "What if the whole class decides not to pay the tax? What if we refuse?" "Is that how all of you feel?" I asked as I looked around the room. "I'm with Freedom. Me too. I'm not paying. No way. Freedom is right," said the students until they all started chanting, "We won't pay. We won't pay. We won't pay." With a wide grin, I finally held up my hands to quiet the student mob and said, "Congratulations, you passed the test. You all get an A." As the class cheered, Tommy and Cam entered the room carrying the sound system and the speakers. And I quickly set them up and invited Liberty to come to the front of the room. With a short introduction, I said, "It is my pleasure to introduce Liberty and his Stomp Act about the Stamp Act." The music started, Liberty began stomping to the beat, and then he started to sing. "I threw a stamp on the fire. Go tell the British Empire. Your Stamp Act agents are fired. You're simply in our way. Go tell King George III his Stamp Act is absurd. This is our final word. You're simply in our way. This law is bogus, taxing all our paper products. Do you really think you own us? Listen to the Stamp Act, Congress. Hey, we just left you, and this is crazy. You never asked us. Don't tax our colonies. We've got Ben Franklin and Patrick Henry. You never asked them. Don't tax our colonies. Because your taxes aren't fair, you make us so mad. You make us so mad. You make us so, so mad. Because your taxes aren't fair. You make us so mad. And you should know that. You make us so, so mad." As the music faded away, Liberty struck a pose and the class applauded and cheered. As the bell rang, I was certain this would be a history lesson they would never forget. The next day, I had to wake up Liberty so that we could have lunch before my class started. He said he was still tired and blamed it on all the time jumping. "Well, let's get some food in you because we'll need to time jump today to meet Samuel Adams," I said. Liberty yawned and replied, "Oh, I remember King George said that Samuel Adams was a rebel,
Is that true?
Yes. Samuel Adams fanned the flames of the Revolutionary War in Boston. He was also a cousin to the American hero John Adams. If possible, I'd like to find Samuel and discover the truth. From what I've heard, he was a stubborn, hot-headed, crafty man who never doubted the cause of freedom.
Oh, he sounds delightful, Liberty said with sarcasm.
I smiled and said, maybe not delightful, but he knew how to motivate people to fight for their liberties, and I want to see how he did it. I want to know what role he played in Boston and what he was truly like.
Fine with me, but I don't think I'm adding him to my Christmas card list.
Well, maybe our visit will change your mind, I said. Liberty paused before he said, Benjamin Franklin, Patrick Henry, Samuel Adams. I'm certain I have a connection with all of these exceptional Americans, but I can't seem to put my hoof on it.
Well, you are from the Revolutionary time period, I reminded him.
Yes, I'm certain of that, said Liberty. Oh, and I'm also certain that I am famished.
No surprise, I thought.
On our way to Manchester Middle School, we stopped and ate bagels and cream cheese. Liberty ate 18 bagels in honor of the 18th century.
A full stomach always makes me sleepy, he said.
Maybe you can take a quick nap during part of my history lesson. As we approached the front doors of the school, Liberty turned invisible. The bell would ring at any second. Students would flood the hallways as they headed toward their final class of the day. As we turned the final corner, I saw Elizabeth slip into the honors history classroom. I assume Liberty saw her too, but just to be sure, I said, "Did you see Elizabeth?"
Liberty exhaled and reappeared at my side.
"Yes, and she looked a little sneaky. I'll stay invisible until we know what she's up to." He took a deep breath and disappeared again. At the sound of the bell, I saw students exit other classrooms along the hallway. We quickly slipped inside the honors history room, and I noticed Elizabeth sitting in her regular seat. She sweetly said, "Hello, Mr. Revere. I think we got off on the wrong foot. I've decided that Manchester Middle School definitely needs a horse. A history teacher with your special skills. By the way, where's Liberty?"
She looked behind me as if she was waiting for Liberty to enter.
I knew she was up to something, but what?
I casually replied, "Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm glad to have you back in honors history. Liberty will be here soon.
What did Principal Sherman say about your new dress?"
"Oh, I told him I went shopping, just had to have it for the homecoming dance," she winked.
"No worries, Mr. Revere, I've got you covered. I know how to play this game. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours."
Tommy entered the classroom and paused when he saw Elizabeth. "Hi, Thomas. Did you miss me?" said Elizabeth, her words dripping with sweetness.
"No offense, but not really."
"No matter. I need to talk to you about the next time we time jump. The possibilities are so exciting, and I know just where I want to..."
Just then the door opened. Several more students began walking in. I was relieved for the interruption. Something was definitely up with Elizabeth. She was acting very strange since our visit with King George. Finally, the bell rang for class to start, and I noticed Cam was standing in the middle of the room, unsure about where to sit.
"It looks like there's a desk in the middle of classroom." I pointed to the empty desk next to Freedom,
and once Cam was seated, I took a quick roll call and welcomed everyone. Liberty finally exhaled and appeared behind Freedom and Cam. I was always impressed at how long he could hold his breath and stay invisible. I turned, grabbed a piece of chalk, and wrote on the chalkboard the Townsend Acts. I said the Stamp Act was not the only act or law that Parliament created and King George III approved to tax the 13 colonies. The Quartering Act, the Declaratory Act, and numerous other acts continued to make the colonies boil with anger and hatred toward King George. But it was the Townsend Acts that may have finally pushed the colonies over the edge.
Elizabeth raised her hand and said, "You're making King George sound like a monster. Actually, he was a very nice guy with incredible taste in fashion, gorgeous blue eyes, and let's not forget, he was a king."
"Thank you, Elizabeth," I said, "but let's finish our discussion by saying that the Townshend Acts were a series of 1767 laws named for Charles Townshend, the British Chancellor of the Treasury. He's the guy keeping track of all the king's money. Now, these laws placed new taxes on glass, lead, paints, paper, and tea. How do you think the colonies felt about paying more and more taxes?"
Cam started singing the chorus from Liberty's Stamp Act song. "Because your taxes aren't fair, you make us so mad, you make us so mad, you make us so, so mad."
The class laughed as Cam took a bow from his seat.
"Exactly," I said. "Many of the colonists protested. Sometimes they showed violence against British soldiers and the British tax collectors. So King George sent more British troops to the colonies. In fact, he sent 4,000 redcoats to the city of Boston, which only had 20,000 residents at the time."
"Sounds like Boston was swarming with redcoats," said Tommy.
"I wish I could take all of you back to Boston on March 5th of 1770, I said. "You'll need to use your imaginations for this. If it helps to close your eyes, please do. Daydream, if you will, to March 5th, 1770. You're in Boston, Massachusetts. It's evening, and the moon is full. You're on King Street in front of the customs office. Street lanterns dimly light the way as you walk along the cobblestone. 18th-century brick buildings, and suddenly the walls of the classroom started to spin. I leaned back onto the teacher's desk for fear that I might topple over. Was I spinning or was the room spinning? I wasn't sure. The students seemed to notice it as well. A gold and purple swirling pattern raced along the walls and encircled us until the walls completely vanished and the Bostonian scene that I had just described appeared all around us. Even the cobblestone street was beneath our desks and feet. I slid my foot across the ground and it was smooth like a classroom floor, not a cobblestone.
Mr. Revere, is this supposed to be happening? Asked Tommy.
No worries, I said, lying. Stay in your seats. You're experiencing a new technological teaching moment.
I honestly had no idea what was happening. It looked like we were back in time, but that was impossible. We hadn't jumped through a portal. We would need liberty to do that. And that's when it hit me. Liberty. This had to be his doing.
I looked to the back of the room, and I noticed him leaned up against the back of the wall, fast asleep.
He must be dreaming this. Somehow his subconscious had the ability to simulate the historical event that I was describing. Liberty was recreating history all around us. None of it was real, but the virtual experience made us feel like we were actually there. It was unbelievable.
I decided to make the most of the situation and continued with my storytelling. Suddenly, you find yourself with a mob of people start to throw snow, ice, and rocks at the British soldiers standing in front of the customs office, I said. And sure enough, as I described the scene, a large mob of colonists appeared to the right of us. To the left appeared a small group of British soldiers. The colonists stood only a few yards away from me and threw a chunk of ice. It hurled directly at me on its way toward the soldiers. Instinctively, I winced and flinched right before the ice hit me on the side of the face. But surprisingly, the ice chunk went right through my head and continued forward, hitting the chest of a British soldier. I'd forgotten this was just a simulation. It was just a virtual, holographic representation that Liberty was creating while dreaming. It seemed so real. I noticed other students dodging snow, ice, and rocks as the projectiles flew through the air. I continued with my narration and shouted, "The redcoats tried to keep order and stop the colonists from demonstrating against the Townshend Acts. However,
The soldiers were forbidden to shoot anyone unless they had an order from a civil magistrate who was like a judge. The Americans and Patriots knew this, so they kept trash-talking and taunting the British troops. Confusion and chaos only increased when the bells began to ring from the nearby old brick church. Again, the literal sound of church bells rang through my ears as the chaos continued all around us. I knew the bell was normally used as a fire alarm in 18th century Boston, so it wasn't surprising when people started shouting, "Where's the fire?" I continued. The large, angry crowd pressed in on the 9 British soldiers, who were desperately outnumbered. Suddenly, one of the British soldiers is knocked down by something hitting his head, and someone yells, "Fire!" The sound of gunshots ripped through the air. Suddenly, the classroom walls returned as the sights and sounds of 1770 Boston vanished like a magical act. "Oh, sorry, I must have dozed off there for a minute," said Liberty, a bit startled. "Did I miss anything? Last thing I remember, you were talking about Boston, then I had the strangest dream. It was more like a nightmare." "That was awesome," said a boy in the front row. "This class rocks," said another boy. "You are the best teacher ever," said a girl sitting by the window. "How did you do that?" Gratefully, the student seemed clueless that Liberty was the source of the simulation. "Oh, it's high-tech cinematronics," I said, hoping it was enough. "Seriously," said Liberty, I feel like I missed something." And just when I tried to get the class back on track, the school fire alarm sounded. Principal Sherman's voice was heard on the school intercom system. He said, "Dear students, this is our annual school fire drill. Please calmly leave your classrooms and head outside to the blacktop. Thank you." I followed the students out of the room, but just before I passed through the doorway, I noticed Freedom and Cam huddled with Liberty. I walked to the back of the room and asked, "I take it the 3 of you have something on your mind?" "Mr. Revere," said Cam, "since Freedom and I didn't time travel with you last time, do you think we could go now? I'd love to go to Boston in 1770. We could learn more about the Boston Massacre." "I'm in," said Freedom enthusiastically, "and we could be back before anybody realizes we're missing." Liberty nodded rapidly and nearly danced in place. "All right," I said. The 3 of them cheered in unison. "You'll have to change your clothes in the past. If you run to the restroom now, you may get caught by another teacher. Now help me move these desks to either side of the room so we have a running path for Liberty." In a matter of seconds, we were ready to go. Freedom and Cam rode on Liberty, and I followed close behind. "Rush! Rush! Rushing to history," said Liberty. We were headed to Boston, and I was excited to find Samuel Adams. I was nervous at the same time. I had just witnessed what happened in Boston on March 5th, 1770. It was